This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Rick Britton, local author and historian, cartographer, he joins us live in studio. How are you, sir?
Pretty good. How are you doing?
Good. That stomach flu thing is going around. You heard about this?
No, I haven't.
There's two things going around, like a bad cold.
Right.
And like a stomach flu,
mm-hmm.
like a really bad, like vomiting and... Oh, man. Like every second or third person I run into has had this thing.
Oh, gee.
Yeah, yeah. So we're fighting the cold thing at my house.
Uh-huh.
But fortunately, we haven't had that stomach flu.
Yeah. Well, the vomiting thing is not a good thing.
No. No, that's no fun.
You need to stay at home, stay in the bathroom, probably.
Yeah. Well, from what I've heard, from the folks who've had it, it feels like food poisoning. It's that bad.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. You haven't heard about
this? Is it peanut butter?
No, it's not peanut butter. It's some kind of stomach flu.
No, I haven't heard about it.
And very contagious, and really, like every second or third person I meet has had this thing.
Wow.
Yeah, it really just knocks you flat.
Watching the news just before I came in, they were talking about how PetSmart now is recalling doggy treats with peanut butter. So this peanut butter thing is huge.
Here we go again.
Yeah.
Man.
Even doggy treats with peanut butter. Are contaminated. Salmonella.
We got to go back to raising our own food.
I think so.
You know?
Buy local.
Yeah, buy local, definitely.
Right.
Golly, this factory farming and factory food stuff.
Right.
You know, because let's be honest, the government's not really watching that. They can't inspect every chicken and every tub of peanut butter.
No, and the FDA is way behind.
Yeah.
On doing its job.
Yeah.
Keeping track of everything.
And it's not like, I mean, of course, the Bush administration fired a lot of people, pulled back a lot of money for that, but it's not like the Clinton administration was doing much better, you know, let's be honest. So, but we want safe food, you know?
Gotta have safe food.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Man.
I mean, peanut butter. Aren't you a big peanut butter eater?
I am.
I am too. That's why I brought this up.
That's my late night weakness.
Same here.
Yeah. I love peanut butter. I mean, give me a jar of peanut butter, a jar of jelly, and a spoon, and I'm fine.
Give me a jar of peanut butter and a tablespoon, and I'm fine.
Yeah, just eat it straight up.
Oh, yeah. Right out of the jar.
We get that for a long time. We got that natural thing where you'd have to mix it, you know? And I just got tired of doing that. So now we just get some, like, natural Jiffy stuff or something. And it's good.
Have you seen the jars where it's already mixed? The jelly's already in the jar?
Oh, yeah. I've never tried that.
Yeah, I tried it one time. It's okay.
But not great.
It's grape, you know? I like strawberry.
I prefer strawberry as well.
Yeah, strawberry.
Allison likes apricot, which I'm going to be honest with you, just between you, me, and the wall, is gross. It's gross. I've tried it. You know, late at night when you want some peanut butter and jelly, you're like, oh, damn. The only thing in here is apricot jelly. So you'll bring it out thinking, oh, it can't be that bad. Hey, it's that bad. Yeah, it's that bad.
Strawberry preserves, right? With the big chunks of strawberries in them.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
You know what my grandfather ate? My mom's dad, who we called Pop. His real name was Newton Hillis Chilton. Newton Hillis, and everybody called him Chili. Atlanta, Georgia. Great guy. He was a food broker.
Uh-huh.
He's the guy who got food from the distributor to the grocery store.
Gotcha.
Had his own business for many, many years. Great, great guy. He ate for breakfast every morning for decades. Peanut butter and jelly on Ritz crackers with Coca-Cola.
For breakfast. Well, Coca-Cola in Atlanta.
Oh, right? Yeah. I mean, it's required.
It's the town.
It's in your blood. Yeah. I mean, that was...
You got to do it.
It was what was in my baby bottles. I mean, let's be honest. But every morning, I'm not kidding. It was like,
oh,
Pop,
my gosh.
That's how he started his day.
And he lived to be how old?
Oh, my gosh. Well, his brain went long before his body did. But he lived into his 90s, healthy as an ox.
Wow, there you go.
Yeah. Smoked a pipe.
There you go.
Cigars.
Peanut butter and jelly on Ritz crackers.
As long as he could have his peanut butter and jelly and play his golf, he was a happy man. But every morning, peanut butter and jelly on Ritz crackers with Coca-Cola.
That's a bizarre breakfast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For decades, Rick. I'm not kidding.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Anyway, so what's going on with you?
Well, listen, I just wanted to tell everybody about this class, Albemarle and Charlottesville in the Civil War. It's down at the Senior Center, and it starts on Wednesday, March 4th. It's for all the Wednesdays in March and into early April. And if you're interested, we're going to talk about what happened here in the Civil War, and what happened to the men and boys from here who went out and fought for the Confederacy. So if you're interested, call down to the travel office at the Senior Center. It's 974-6538. You can check it out on the website at www.seniorcenterinc.org, Or you can email me, rhbritton@aol.com, and get some more information that way.
I'm sitting here reading some of the topics for this class that you're going to be talking about.
Uh-huh.
This is fantastic. I mean, folks are going to have such a good time.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, that is going to be a lot of fun. So y'all sign up for that. That's going to be a lot of fun with Rick in March and April, learning about the Civil War here in Central Virginia. That's good stuff. Go to give a call to the Senior Center Travel Office, 974-6538, or you can go online, seniorcenterinc.org.
What a week for history. Did you watch the inaugural address?
I did watch it. My daughter was home with a cold. We don't have TVs.
Is that the only reason you were home?
That's.
Or did you take the day off?
No. I would have gone to work.
Okay.
Yeah, because I could have watched it from work.
Okay.
So I stayed home with her because she was sick. But we don't have TV, so I hooked up the laptop on the table. And
right.
She and I sat there and watched it on the computer.
What a phenomenal speech.
Yeah. I couldn't believe all those people.
Yeah. They probably had 1 million. I haven't seen the total listed, have you? But they probably had 1 million people.
At least.
It looked like.
Supposedly.
It was 1 million people.
Supposedly, if it went down just the mall part, just the grass part, if that was full down to the Washington Monument, that was 1 million. That's how they sort of configured it.
And they made it down to the Washington Monument.
It was past that, and it was into the side streets. And yeah,
right,
it could have been
right.
2 million. Yeah. Really amazing.
Well, that's really pushing it. I think 1 million is.
You think 1 million?
Sounds
about
right.
I'll see your million and raise you $250,000.
It was phenomenal. And just Googling around on the internet today, I found a story, and I'm not sure if this is true, but evidently he's got a 27-year-old speechwriter who was working with him all through the campaign.
27?
Who did most of this, you know, evidently
in diapers.
While sitting in a Starbucks.
Oh, you're kidding.
But it's a phenomenal speech, and of course the man is just an incredible speaker. He just has such an amazing ability.
Have a,
he really has
a gift
an amazing
oratory.
Ability.
No question about it.
So I want everybody to know I really enjoyed it. I really appreciate it. But there are at least 3 factual errors.
Are you serious?
Historical errors in the speech.
I
yeah.
love it.
And so we're going to go through number one, it's in the second paragraph, he says, and I have the speech in front of me, 44 Americans have now taken the presidential oath. That's not right. He's the 44th president, but he's the 43rd person to take the presidential oath. And that's because, you history buffs out there, Grover Cleveland is the only president that we had with 2 terms that were non-sequential. So Grover Cleveland was actually our 22nd president. He served from 1885 to 1889, and our 24th president served from 1893 to 1897. So Obama should have said, well, he's the 44th president of the United States, but the 43rd
person
to take the presidential oath.
Rick, what a good catch. Man.
Well, that's in the second paragraph.
But that's confusing to people a lot because we have this, we got placemats for the kids, and one of the placemats we have,
right.
It has all the presidents on them. And
right.
we were looking at them the other day, and my daughter said, there's a mistake here. They got this one guy in here twice.
Twice, right.
And I said, that's Grover Cleveland.
That's
he was
right.
president twice.
That's right.
But he did not succeed himself.
He did not succeed himself.
Very interesting.
So there was somebody in between. And then toward the end of the speech, and I just thought this was fantastic, he took us back to the American Revolution, and he said, so let us mark this day with remembrances of who we are and how far we have traveled in the year of America's birth. And I'm sitting there throwing, oh my gosh, he took us right back to 1776.
Yeah.
In the year of America's birth, in the coldest of months, December. And I thought, oh my gosh, a small band of patriots huddled by dying campfires on the shores of an icy river. And I immediately knew what he was talking about. He was talking about the Battle of Trenton,
yeah.
and Washington crossing the Delaware.
Which was in 1776.
Was in 1776. It was. Wait a minute. Here come the mistakes. The capital was abandoned. The enemy was advancing. 2 mistakes in a row. Philadelphia hadn't fallen yet. Philadelphia had not been captured by the British, and the enemy had stopped advancing. It was because of the Delaware River that they'd stopped advancing. The Delaware stopped them. So 2 mistakes in a row there.
Nice catch, Rick.
The capital was abandoned.
Awesome.
The enemy was advancing, but then it goes on, and it's just fantastic. The snow was stained with blood, and that's true. There are lots of accounts, and I'm going to recommend a great book for everybody in just a moment where they can read about this. There are lots of accounts of the men, despite the fact that it was December 26th and snow covering the ground, and in a snowstorm, these men went to fight the Battle of Trenton. barefooted, a lot of them barefooted. The snow was stained with blood. At a moment when the outcome of our revolution was most in doubt, and that's absolutely true, the father of our nation, Washington, ordered these words be read to the people. Let it be told to the future world that in the depth of winter, when nothing but hope and virtue could survive, that the city and the country, alarmed at one common danger, came forth to meet it. And it was funny because when the commentators were talking about the speech afterwards, even Wolf Blitzer, that's who I was watching, CNN, yeah. Wolf Blitzer goes, and he quoted George Washington. Well, Wolf Blitzer was confused. Washington ordered that that be read to the people.
But he didn't write it.
But they're not the words of George Washington. They're the words of Thomas Paine from the American Crisis. And the speechwriter and Obama were absolutely right. As those guys were getting ready to cross the Delaware to attack the Hessian troops, and we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, a thousand, three regiments of Hessians that were in Trenton, New Jersey, across the river, he ordered that the latest issue, the first one that came out, actually, because it was a series of pamphlets of the American Crisis, be read to the troops. And
by Thomas Paine, of course, who inspired all those founding fathers. If there was one person that inspired all the founding fathers, it was Paine.
He really did.
He has really not had his due yet, has he?
He hasn't had his due. And I'm not sure if there's been a recent great biography, but it's really due. And especially since he was quoted in an inaugural address.
It's definitely time to rediscover this guy, who's just an amazing guy, and his life is just a fantastic story. Maybe you can talk to us about him one time.
I'll do that.
When you come in.
An Irishman, not an American, and an Irish pamphleteer.
And didn't he end up in a British prison?
He did, and he ended up going across after the American Revolution. He went across the Atlantic and then wrote in France and had something to do inspiring the French Revolution. So this guy had a lot to do with
amazing
both of the big revolutions in his lifetime, as Lafayette did.
Yeah.
As Lafayette did. But anyway, it was a great speech, but I thought those mistakes were kind of interesting.
Absolutely. Nice catch. Nice catches there. And only you are sitting there going, wait a minute.
That's not right.
Good stuff. All right, we'll take a quick break. More with Rick Britton when we get back. This is Charlottesville Right Now.
Tonight on the best seat in the house.
Hand off to Pyramid around the left side. He dives! Touchdown!
Services is the company you can trust. They guarantee it. For a limited time, call 434-977-7318 and receive a $55 heating check special. Call for details. Blue Ridge Services, 434-977-7318. Carrier, turn to the experts.
It's 4:51, 9 minutes before 5 o'clock. This is Charlottesville Right Now. Coming up in the next hour, we'll talk with Hawes Spencer of The Hook. Talk a little local news stories. Looking forward to that. Thanks for joining me this afternoon. Happy little Friday to you. It's 45 degrees.
On my front porch swing, smell of shrimp.
We're talking with Rick Britton, local author and historian. What else you got for us?
Well, listen, I mentioned
besides
this
the very first mistakes of Barack Obama as president.
It was still a great speech. I enjoyed it tremendously.
Amazing that it was written by a 27-year-old kid, which to me as a kid, that's amazing.
If that's true. So I just saw that briefly, and I skimmed through it because it was just before I got in the car.
Yeah.
Well, it's
probably like Jefferson in the Declaration. Went through many rounds of edits, I'm sure.
Oh, I'm sure. But listen, I mentioned this earlier, so I wanted to tell everybody what book this was. It was Washington's Crossing, and I don't think it came out all that long ago, maybe only 2 or 3 years ago. Washington's Crossing by David Hackett Fisher, who's just a phenomenal writer. He's one of the best historians writing today, and he writes mostly about the American Revolution. That's his area of expertise. And so if you want to read about the Battle of Trenton and the New Jersey campaign and Washington's retreat from all those disastrous battles around New York City all the way across central New Jersey, this is the book, Washington's Crossing, by David Hackett Fisher.
Is that like the book of that? Happened?
It really is, and it's won a lot of awards. It's really well done, and he does some things I've never seen done before because I read a lot of military history. He doesn't assume that the reader knows anything, so at the very beginning, which was really great, he describes the differences in the three armies that were involved in this campaign, the American Army, the British Army, but also the Hessians. And so he treats them with a chapter each and describes how they were made up.
That's Germans, right?
The average age, yeah, the Germans, the Hessians.
And the British hired them to come in as like...
That's right. They're mercenaries. That's how the that's how their princes, that's how their kings made money. Blood money. That's where the term blood money comes from, by hiring out your army as mercenaries. And he treats those three armies in a chapter each. So it's really, really good.
There you go. We got David on the line. David, you're on with Rick Britton. Go right ahead.
Yes. Rick, I'm calling not so much to ask a history question, but
right.
I've asked this question of many people, and I figured you would be the one who could give me the best answer and really know it.
Okay.
What is
I hope
the
so.
Difference between a state and a commonwealth?
That's an excellent question, and surprisingly enough, I heard constitutional lawyer answer that question on another radio station not 2 months ago, and the answer was no difference. So there's the answer. There is no difference.
I just looked online here. The commonwealths are Massachusetts, Pennsylvania, Virginia, and Kentucky. It says the only difference between these and the ones called states is in name alone.
That's right. There is no difference.
Name alone. Okay.
They elect to call themselves commonwealth, which is a term drawn from political theory, but nuts and bolts wise, there's no difference.
Right.
Well, thanks so much for the answer. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Thanks for calling in.
Absolutely. Yeah. Appreciate it. Thanks so much. That's very interesting. I'm sure a lot of people think that. You hear the Commonwealth of Virginia, but you never hear the Commonwealth of West Virginia.
So what were the ones again? Virginia. Did you say West Virginia?
Nope. Massachusetts, Pennsylvania, Virginia, and Kentucky.
So only four
you've
got. Okay.
Four commonwealths, Massachusetts, Pennsylvania, Virginia, all old, historically part of early America.
That's right.
And they're commonwealths.
Right. Kentucky probably followed the lead of Virginia, having been
part
of Virginia. Right.
Yeah.
So that probably, that's probably the reason for Kentucky calling itself
a commonwealth. It says there's another form of commonwealth, a self-governing, autonomous political unit, voluntary, associated with the United States, namely Puerto Rico and the Northern Mariana Islands?
Marianas, yeah.
Marianas.
Right.
Those are commonwealths.
Interesting.
But not the same kind that Virginia is.
That's right.
There you go.
That's
very
right.
Interesting.
That's right. You know, this week on the 19th, which would have been, what, Monday? Is that right?
Si, senor.
Si, senor. Muchas gracias. The Monday the 19th was Edgar Allan Poe's 200th birthday.
How about that?
And I know people have asked you this before. What did Poe write about Charlottesville and the University of Virginia? Did he write anything about this area? He was here for 10 months. As a student in 1826. And of course, the first answer is Tale of the Ragged Mountains. And that's a fascinating story that supposedly takes place in 1827. He says, while residing near Charlottesville, and he writes about this guy that he meets, a man by the name of Bedloe, and who's a very strange character. And Bedloe goes for a walk in the Ragged Mountains and goes deeper and deeper into a chasm, and then gets transported in time and space to the siege of a Indian city. And he witnesses the death of a British officer by the name of Old Deb, which is Bedloe spelled backwards, and then goes insane after this experience. But everybody cites Tale of the Ragged Mountains as the only story that's written about his time here in Charlottesville and the University of Virginia. And I believe there's actually another one. It's not as well known, and it's called William Wilson. And real quick, he's in school in England. Poe is the character. The protagonist, and at Eton. So it doesn't take place at the University of Virginia, but it's about this student at Eton and how he falls into gambling and how it ruins his university, his college experience. And here's just one quote. Here's just one quote.
Writing from experience, I would imagine.
Exactly. The vortex of thoughtless folly into which I there so immediately and so recklessly plunged washed away all but the froth of my past hours, engulfed at once every solid or serious impression, and left to memory only the variatus, levities of a former existence. So he talks about the dissipation that he fell into through gambling and playing cards and drink.
Which, of course, for folks who don't know exactly what happened here as a student at the University of Virginia, that's exactly what happened.
That's exactly what happened to him.
Yeah, it was a whole lot of gambling going on at the time, and there were all sorts of rules against it. They would expel you if they found you. I mean, you weren't allowed to play cards. Just cards. You weren't allowed to have cards on you.
Is that true?
They were illegal. No, and they played Loo and Whist and all these games that were popular at the time.
Right.
If they found you just playing cards, you could be expelled.
I didn't know that.
Oh yeah, it was a zero tolerance policy for cards, gambling, any of that stuff.
Wow.
Yeah, because that's below a young man of high character.
Right.
Not to get involved in any of that kind of thing. So.
And he got heavily in debt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So much so that his stepdad brought him home.
That's right.
I wonder if his dad ever paid off his...
I don't think they did. It was a lot. It was about $2,000.
So instead of trying to pay it off, he said, just get out of there and come back to Richmond.
Yeah. I'm taking you back home, young man.
There you go. Rick Britton, local author and historian, joins us on Friday afternoons.
Normally. Yeah.
Today is a special little Friday.
Yeah.
Rick, thank you so much.
Yeah, enjoyed it.
And we'll look forward to talking about Thomas Paine here one day.
Yeah, that'll be great.
Yeah. Have a good week. We'll talk
you
to you
too.
Soon.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SeavillePodcast.com for more.